This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast. Heather McDonald, my guest. Isn't that groovy music?
I like it. I like your theme song.
It's groovy, right?
How did you choose it?
Chris gave me about, how many, 10 songs?
Yeah, I picked a couple for you to
choose
from.
Then I went, that one. That's the one. And everyone looked at me. And everyone...
Swanky.
Chris, everyone was a little bit like resistant to this one too, weren't they? People were like, what? This one? Remember?
They said it was too Austin Powersy, but that's exactly what you wanted.
That's what I was looking for.
Oh, good for you.
I was going for that. Well, they didn't think I would like that song. Like, this isn't you. Why would you pick that song? That's sort of what I got to... I know.
Maybe people don't really know the real you.
Heather does, though. Heather does. So Heather's book is My Inappropriate Life. We will put it up on the website. You can click through at Amazon at drdrew.com. And you will wet the Corolla beak, thereby keeping this pirate ship afloat and keeping Corolla out of my ass because he is on me to make some money so I can, you know, his employees need money.
Yes, of course. Look at this operation. The way the world ends.
But isn't this operation huge?
No, this place is great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not cheap.
And Chris isn't cheap, and mm-mm. Gary Haftard is not here. I don't understand. Maybe he's cheap. I don't know.
He's at Coachella partying right now.
Oh, Coachella.
Is that where he went?
Yeah.
I have no desire to ever go to Coachella.
I have zero.
Oh, my God. That's like my worst.
Right?
I'm sorry. I just wasn't like the sweaty pot, like hippy-dippy chick ever.
I'm stunned to learn that. You're more the Four Seasons montage
yes,
chick.
Yes. Like a Vegas nightclub maybe, but not Coachella.
Would you guys – I got to go through all the material here. My Inappropriate Life. Get it. Read it. She also has You'll Never Blue Ball in This Town Again, her previous book. HeatherMcDonald.net is the website, MCDonald. At Heather McDonald is the website, Twitter. And you all know Heather as the writer, producer, and frequent participant on Chelsea Lately on E! As well as Chelsea After Chelsea.
After Lately.
After Lately, right?
Yeah, we have our finale this Monday.
What's going to happen in it?
Well, the Kardashians and she make up at my book party.
Nice.
And that's about it. And just doing stand-up and everything. So check my site for the dates, too.
I did After Lately once.
I know.
That
when we had the intervention for Chelsea.
Was it for Chelsea?
Thought it was for Chelsea. That's right. You thought it was for Chelsea, but it was for Chris Frangiola. And you're a very good actor.
Chris with the teeth.
Yes.
Very funny. It was very funny. And my favorite part of it was at the very end of it, you kept trying to get my attention to talk about your Ambien habit. I'm not sure if that was actually part of the thing. But you keep going. Now, if I take one a week and I have a little bit of wine with it, is that a big problem? Is that all right?
I do. I don't. I've tried an Ambien, but then when I went to a doctor and asked about Ambien, he wouldn't give me any. So I do.
Wait.
Tylenol
PM. You have to listen very carefully to patients. Where did you get your Ambien initially?
I just got one from Chelsea once.
Ah, you're stealing other people's. Okay.
And then I did feel like I was having like a weird hallucinogenic weird dream.
From the Ambien?
From that, yes. So
did
then
you get up and walk around or anything?
No. But I just remember being in the bed and just like it was weird. And so then I went to a doctor and I said, you know, I do travel a lot. Maybe I'd like a prescription for something stronger. And he was like, absolutely not.
Than Ambien?
No, just stronger like than Advil PM or Tylenol PM. Like
a
real something.
A real sleep pill.
Or something for I don't know. And then he was like, no, you know, too many people are getting on these sleeping pills and stuff. So now I try not to do anything. Sometimes I do like a natural over-the-counter sleep something.
Do you travel a lot to do comedy?
Yeah, I do.
And sometimes it's impossible to sleep on a plane without it sometimes.
I know.
So
and I
do
usually
do?
Don't. I just try not to make it too difficult. Like I try not to have too many things in a row that, you know, where I, you know, too many. Like once in a while I'll do a show on a Sunday night and I'll fly in the next morning. But it's only like from Vegas or Phoenix.
Do you have any dates coming up?
Yes, I do. Funny that you'd ask. I am going to be Nashville. What are you pointing at? Zanies, Nashville, May 2nd through the 4th. And then Stand Up Live in Phoenix, May 10th and 12th. And then South Point Casino in Vegas, June 7th through the 9th.
Nice.
Irvine Improv, June 27th.
Do you go with any of the Chelsea crew or you're just by yourself?
You know, all of us are headliners on our own. So sometimes we'll do a show together if someone puts it together. Most of the time we just headline. And once in a while I can bring an opener. I'm bringing Michael Yo to South Point.
He's moving along quite well, isn't he?
Well, my God, he's like on 15 shows. Yes. Of course I want him to open for
me. He's a good guy. He's
yeah,
a good
I know.
Guy
he's
too.
Such a sweetheart. He's
and,
great.
And he's been more – he and Chris Hardwick both more on Chelsea these days.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Guys
well, you know, he's been on for – yeah, he's been on
I've
for
known these guys a long time.
But now
time.
He's like on OMG Insider yeah, and CBS.
Yeah.
And
he's good.
Stuff. Yeah.
So now I want to read something that's in this promotional material that you have got to explain to me. Became an instant stepmom after her new husband became a dad from a one-night stand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I knew this part of the story.
You don't? This no. is the juiciest part of the story
Tell
of my
me.
Life.
Tell me.
So I met Peter. We were set up on a date. And then we just really hit it off. Started dating, you know, became boyfriend and girlfriend for like 9 months.
And this was how long ago?
This was 1998. And talked about, you know, marriage. And, you know, he'd be like, wouldn't you just like to get a little house?
And neither,
said,
of,
I
neither
love
of you had
you.
Been married before or anything?
No. He okay. had been engaged before. And which I, when the, my friend was setting me up with him, said, oh, he's 33. He was engaged, but it was a broken engagement. And that was huge. I was like, oh, this guy's not afraid to get married, blah, blah, blah. So he was like a great boyfriend. Everything was perfect. And then he started acting really weird. And I'm like, why are you acting so mean and weird to me? And he goes, well, someone is saying that I might be the father of her child. And I immediately thought, oh, this kid's like a year and a half or something. He's like, no. She's like due any day. And he had gone on a date with her like, oh, the weekend before we met. And I did the timing and it was true. Like it really was like to the date of like 9.5, 10 months, which you have to be pregnant for.
Give you a couple of observations.
Yes.
One is, I'm sure you've held this over him ever since. You've got this on. You sure thought yourself, oh, it's awesome. I've got this
you
on.
You know what,
him.
Though?
I could use this forever.
I thought I could. But then we came to a point in the marriage where he really was like, you can never throw this. You can't say this anymore.
That's and after, in the that's latest. After, that's after 15 years of doing it. Be fair. 10 years of doing it.
I've done it very little.
10 years
I've done
of doing
it very
it,
little.
But 10 years
like
of doing
if,
it.
You know, there. I mean, there's times where he's been like criticizing me about something. And I'm like, well, at least my mistake doesn't cost us $100,000 in legal fees and child support payments.
Slow clap.
Once in a
You've
while.
You've always got that. You've always
but
got
I,
that.
But I have had to stop.
And
the latest time that I had to stop was... She, her mom, after putting us through hell for all these years, basically she decided she wanted Mackenzie to live with us starting seventh grade, which was last year.
What?
Yeah. She was just like, I don't think, you know, she's called crying because she became a bitch. My stepdaughter became a teen, preteen little bitch.
A pain in the ass.
And so then she didn't want her. When she was 1.5, we had to get a court order to see her and we had to do exchanges at the police department
now,
and
wait,
all
what,
this
what
other
is
stuff.
That about parenting? That when they're a nice little baby, everybody
exactly.
wants them. And when they become...
It's a possession.
But then when they become like a person, I'll have
it's
none of
not
this.
As fun.
I'm
and,
done.
Yeah. And so then she just was... So then Peter was like, my husband was like, I don't know, you know, Brandon, our youngest, is starting kindergarten. And I think it's going to be hard. And immediately was like, absolutely, let's get her now. Let's get her now at 12. Let's not wait till she's 14 and has a piercing and... Is you know, right now she'll start the Catholic school and she'll make friends. And then by high school, she'll be ready to live the life I want her to live.
How long ago was that?
So she got into the high school.
How
the
long
same,
ago was this?
This is now she's in eighth grade. So last year was hell.
1 year.
And now she's in eighth grade. And
wait, wait.
She got
better
into,
like 2 years, right? 2 years you've had her? Or 1 year?
Full time, it'll be 2 years in September.
Oh, my God.
We always had her every other weekend. But we never had her for school. And it was an adjustment, you know. And I'll be honest, the other day, she rarely sees her mom at all.
Ooh.
And,
what went on there?
They kind of decide between themselves. And it's like.
No, something went down.
Oh, no, the mom's very odd. The mom's very odd. She is Asian. She, you know.
She beat her?
No, she didn't beat her, but they have a weird relationship together.
She must have hit her.
Do you think she hit her?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what happened when she was a little girl. Mm. Right when I gave birth to Drake, they're 3.5 years apart. Actually 3 years apart. The day Peter was going to pick her up, I had a 2-day-old baby. He calls me and she's been burned by an iron. She fell on it.
She fell
well,
on the
she
iron?
Well, she rolled on it and they were ironing on the floor or something. Very weird.
Very weird.
We get the social workers all involved.
Where was the burn?
Back of her leg. You could see the iron.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like right out of like Good Times with Penny. Yeah. Remember that? I swear to God. I mean, now she's tan and she's 13. You can't see it. But for years, it was like You could see the holes and the...
We had an iron fall on our kid's foot when he was one or two or something.
I mean, I'm not saying... I don't know that it's... I don't know that she took it and... I don't know that.
Yeah.
It was weird. But then my husband was working full time and I stay home. So I remember then as I had like the ice pads in my crotch from having a baby, I had to then take her to Kaiser and get it rewrapped with my 2-day-old baby as a stepmother because it was our weekend. And so she gives us the wounded child. The other time that she got hurt was she cut part of her finger off when she was cutting shrimp in a bowl.
The kid was cutting shrimp in a bowl?
No, the mom was, and her hand got in the way.
Oh, that's weird.
Now, luckily, it kind of grew. It grew
that's
back. You
weird.
Can't
the finger
see.
Grew
Very
back?
Weird. We go through an entire custody battle before she turned 5.
So, what you're saying is you resent Mackenzie?
No, I don't resent Mackenzie.
Here's what I want you to know. This is the other, I haven't told you the second thing. I want you to know.
Second
thing is when I brought this up.
Yeah.
Your pupils literally went. They constricted
really?
And expanded. I thought, this is interesting. Literally, your pupils pinned and then blew. That is extreme emotion. So there's a lot of stuff
flying
around.
You don't even know what else is in the story.
Well, I saw.
I know that, you know, I had to take this out of my book because I knew she would read this. But the first version of my book, Blue Balls. Oh, we'll
get some calls.
Okay,
don't worry about it. We got time.
Now, this is true. Now, you're going to really die when you hear this because I just shared this with one of the comedians of Chelsea, with the writers. And they were like, they're like, you're obviously in this marriage for the long haul. I can't believe you put up with all this stuff. When she was about 2.5, the custody changed where we, after the burn, after the cut, we got her 50% of the time. She was 2.5. Even though she lived 2 hours away, we would do half the week, or every other week. We changed it after a while. But anyway, we had her for 50% of the time. They changed it. And so I went to go pick her up. I got a court order that I could now pick her up because I'd driven all the way to Corona before and from LA, and she wouldn't give her to me. I just had to turn around. And so
it's the mom you hate, not the daughter.
Oh, no, I don't hate the daughter. No,
you hate
no.
the mom.
And so
you
anyway,
hate the mom. She's a bitch.
She is, but I feel sorry for her now. To be totally honest, I feel really sorry for her that she really doesn't have a relationship with her daughter and it's all her choosing. I can't believe I feel sorry because wait till I tell you this story.
Go.
I get a call. Okay, so the next time I go to pick her up, she comes with this other woman in Mackenzie. She takes a picture of me, which I smile for. Like, okay, you want a picture of me? I smile. She gives me Mackenzie, and this other woman's there. And I go, okay, thank you, bye. I get her in the car. The next night, I get a call, and this woman calls me, and she says, hi, my name is, I'll just call her Susie Joe for now. And I was with you when you did the exchange with Mackenzie. I was with the mother. I was with
like in the car or something.
No, like they walked out. We had to do the exchanges at police stations. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Because there's one of those like false accusation kind of things all the time. You know, she once claimed Peter threw a blanket at her and wanted to sue. Anyway, I said, oh yes, hi. She goes, I'm taping this because the mother, who I will call ST for now, the mother ST just called me to try to find someone to have you killed. And I'm recording it because I want you to know. I'm not looking. I'm not helping her. I was a paralegal who met her, and I don't want you know. I remember exactly where I was. I just you know I took her name and number.
When was this?
This was about 10 years ago.
And what'd you do?
So I walked out to the kitchen where Mackenzie was. We had her that weekend, and she was maybe a little under 3 because I wasn't. I didn't have any kids yet. We just had her. So maybe she's 2.5. And I said, and she was eating chicken with Peter, and I was like shaking. And I'm like, oh my God. So I call my sister, who's an attorney,
Did
a defense
you help
attorney.
Peter right then?
Oh, yeah. We call my sister immediately. What do we do? She's like, you go right down to the police station right now and you report it. So we report the whole thing. The next day, I go to Van Nuys. I go in front of a judge. I tell my story. We get a restraining order. My husband serves a restraining with her to her. When she thinks she's getting her back at the Tarzana Police Department or whatever it was, Reseda, and then for the next about the next 6 weeks, we go through this whole thing with our attorney and their attorney. I talk to detectives. The detectives say to me, well, what you should have done is you should have never told her about this. You should have come to us first, and we should have done a sting operation. Well, listen, if I was where I am now with all the 48-hour mysteries that I've watched since 2000, I would know to
and
do
Jodi
that.
Harris.
But in 1999, I didn't know to do that, you know?
Wow.
I was like, or no, now, no, now it's about 2001. It's after 9/11 because I accused the cop of profiling, being that she was a small Asian woman. I'm like, you're telling me if a black guy made this threat, you wouldn't care? And he's like, oh, what are you accusing me of? So anyway, so we go through the whole thing, pay our attorney like $30,000, trying to get her. And
what are you getting her for?
I mean, we want her full time. We want
trial.
We go through a trial, not a trial, but in front of a judge at a court. I have my friend testify of what she's witnessed between the exchanges of us and everything. It's basically this woman's word against hers. So in the end, the judge says, I think that Heather McDonald should fear for her life on a daily basis.
He says this into the record?
He says it in the record. But she is the mother. And the good news is anything happens to you, she'll be the first suspect. So,
oh, that's good news. So if you're dead, Heather, we'll get her. Don't worry.
So chances are she doesn't want to go to jail. She knows she'll be the first suspect. You know, she lied. She didn't lie. I don't know what the truth is. She claimed this woman just made up the story, that she never said that. This woman is like saying, honestly, she did, you know? And I know that people can hire people to kill people.
Look,
for
not only that, what,
for $500.
What's in it for the woman to make up a story? You got to think, what's the motivation?
Why
would this woman get involved
in
all
like
this?
She was a paralegal.
But why would she
like
get
she
anywhere
had,
near
exactly.
any of this? What's in it for her to go, I know, I'll go torment Heather McDonald. I'll tell her someone's going to kill her.
Yeah.
What? What fucking planet would that be?
So then we went back to doing.
Are you still worried about her?
No. Not at all. Right. Not at all. And then we went back to 50-50, and then at 5 years old, when she was about five, we tried to get her full time so that she could go to kindergarten with us. We went through an entire evaluation, and the evaluation came back and said, Heather and Peter are the better parents, they're better educated, they aren't hovering over her, they do this, they do that. But she is the mother, and if she was to leave her mother now at this age, there would be
repercussions.
No relationship there.
Right, right.
So then come, now she's 12.
She leaves the mother.
She gives us to her. She gives it, she, you know.
It was her idea?
Oh, we kind of had to convince McKenzie because was like, oh, I like my friends in my school, you know, and I had to be like, you know, I think this is best. Your mom works all the time and we're going to do this.
What kind of work does the mom do?
She's a hairdresser. She does fine. She like owns her own shop, you know.
So fucking
but
crazy.
Then she'll go pick her up on a Friday night. She'll work all day Saturday cutting hair.
Not
and then
her.
We pick her up Sunday at
not
1.
See her.
And I'm
you got to find out from Kenzie what this woman did to her. So, she did something crazy.
We talked to her, you know, I talked to her and she's opening up, but
you also need to do something else.
I also don't want to you know, I've tried to say, would you like your mom to come on Sunday? And why go all the way there? Why doesn't your mom come Sunday? Why don't you guys go ice skating? Why don't you go to the mall? Why don't you go to the movie? She's like, no, I don't want my mom to be seen here. I'm embarrassed by her. I don't want to shop with her. She wears a skimpy outfit, all this kind of stuff. So I kind of just go, you know what? It's between the two of you guys. I'm like, if you don't want to go any weekend, I'll never force you.
I'm not saying get into splitting. Yeah. Like, oh, isn't she a bitch?
No.
We're going to splitting behaviors, but you might get into what just, you know, did anything ever difficult happen between you and your mom? Just open-ended stuff. You know, give her a chance to talk about it. Because for a 12-year-old to want to go away and stay away, something happened. It just did.
Yeah, but she also knew our family. I mean, she also knew our family well, though. Like, I mean, it wasn't like she came out of nowhere.
Thank God. I know.
We had her every weekend.
I'm just saying.
Every other weekend.
The other thing is, Peter's a great guy. I've met him. Had dinner with him.
Thank you.
And he plays golf a lot.
Uh-huh.
And you need to go home today and kick him in the balls because he's put you through hell. You need to kick him in the nuts for me.
Oh, so what I was going to say. When we decided to take her full time, he said, you can never bring this up because I gave me bring it up
bring
as like,
up?
Bring up like, it's your daughter. Like, I can never say she's your daughter.
To her.
To Peter. I never say that to Peter.
Anymore.
I haven't said that in years, but because I said I wanted her at 12, it was like my decision. His mother said
don't do it.
He didn't want to do it. His mother said don't do it.
You did it for 12 years. I get it.
No, but I knew as a parent, and as a girl and everything, I knew by getting her at 12, we would have an easier life for the rest of our lives. I'm like, she's going to be our daughter forever.
Yes, yes.
Let's try to make her the best 30-year-old that she can be screwed up at 30.
You did the right thing. I'm not saying you did the wrong thing. You still need to kick Peter in the nuts.
I don't think I'm ever going to. I wish I had.
When you were a sorority girl at SC, did you imagine this would be what
no.
you would go through? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I know. But then I have such a great life. And she is a really good girl.
So there's Drake, there's Mackenzie, and isn't there another
Brandon.
One? Brandon. How's Brandon?
He's 7. And the other day, she finally went to go visit her mom, and the four of us were going to play tennis, just the boys and Peter and I, and Drake goes, we're in the elevator, and he goes, don't you like it? 1, 2, 3, 4, just 4 of us. Mm-mm. And I've been like, Drake, stop it. Mm-mm. I go, we don't ever say that. You know, and he goes, what? It's just fun. Otherwise, she's always whiny and she doesn't want to do anything. And I go, so what? You know?
Okay, well, listen
it's
to him.
It's very
listen
rare.
To him,
I'm like, it's very rare that it's going to be the four of us, but you no, don't I,
but,
ever want to say that in front of
but
her.
But don't diminish his feelings. How old is Drake? 12? 11?
10.
10, yeah. Ooh, goodness. Ooh, wee. Oh, wait till your boys start. The hormones turn off.
I don't want to talk about that.
They're going to, those
I don't
little
talk
spry,
about that.
Lovely, fun. Little boys are going to turn into lumps of flesh that smell and fart and watch porn.
I don't want it at all.
That's it. That's all they're going to do. And play video games. They play video games. All of them. All their friends. They'll just be strewn all over the place.
Like they play the videos now, but I have to control it.
Yeah, but now they're there and they're up on their feet. Soon they'll be on their ass back, you know, like back in the couch, smelling to high heaven. You'll be wondering. They'll seem like they'll sleep. They'll grunt. They won't answer full sentences. We gotta have Heather back when they hit about 17. Fifteen would be peak. Ugh. Peak goodness for that.
I just try to enjoy these moments.
Yeah, well, Chris is still that way. He's 27.
I just try to
see
enjoy
how works.
These moments right now with you, Dr. Drew.
Now, you know,
I've never ever told that story to anybody, like on the air or anything.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a really
because she doesn't know it.
She doesn't know.
Doesn't know about the death threat and all that. I don't know that she ever has to know it.
No, I wouldn't make an issue of it, that's for sure.
I mean, if she asked me about it, I'd say, yeah, this is what happened.
Well, you'd want to delay any of those conversations until she's really an adult.
Yeah.
And sort of make it like, let me flush out the picture of everything that's going on.
I mean,
on.
For a long time, she was like, she thought they were married.
Peter and your mom?
Yeah, they literally had like one date. So she thought they were married, and I'm like, no, they weren't. You know, I'm like, I'm sorry. That lie is not going to happen. You know, I'm sorry. I'm the only wife. And I just kind of, and so I would just explain it. Yeah, they liked each other. And then they decided they didn't like each other, but they both wanted to raise you, but they'd be happier with other people while raising you together. That's what I said. They liked you for one night at a happy hour. I mean, what the hell do you ever say? I mean, it's like, because Drake kept going for so long. I don't understand how she's part of our family if they weren't married.
How do you explain it to the
because
boys?
They learn that, you know,
oh my God,
you get married
hysterical.
When, you know, you have kids when you get married. You get married and then you have kids.
You got
and so,
some,
like,
oh, man, you
so
have
I have
some
to
explaining
explain.
To do in a couple of years. Oh, Heather. I think you
I
need to have Uncle Drew over to help you out.
Oh, my God,
one.
I'd love it.
Yeah, I think maybe my son's ought to come too. Just so they get a good little kick out of this. Oh, my God. And Heather and I have another connection, which is we have some very close friends who have triplet girls. And their girls are exactly 6 months ahead of our kids.
Right.
And when we got pregnant, the fertility group hooked us up with them. And Kathy, the mom, and my wife became very close friends. We've been with them forever.
I know.
And they end up babysitting your kids.
The triplets are so good. The triplets that babysit my kids are so
good.
Yeah,
so the Kazan triplets and the Pinsky triplets have been raised around and, you know, side by side their entire lives, which is weird. And then Heather McDonald gets in the mix. and we found out through some weird way.
No, I know. I was just telling you, I was like, oh, I've got these hot triplets that should be your triplets. Yeah. And you're like, do they live in West Hill?
No, you said something about, I go, where do you live? It sounded very weirdly familiar to me.
Yeah, you're
said,
like, I've
you
known
live?
Those triplets since they were our whole lives, yeah.
Oh, my God. The other thing is this whole business of having police there because somebody threatened your life. I had a crazy stalker story.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever told it on the air or anything. So let me share my
story.
Sure. Yeah. This was a guy. I'm at my office one day, and I get a complaint from a small claims court in Santa Monica. $1,500. And I was like, what? I didn't know the guy's name. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even understand what the complaint was. I threw it away. Comes again. It caught my attention this time. Like, this can't be really happening, can it? And it's, and then a third.
What are they suing for?
Well, then I started reading it carefully. And the complaint the third time was, if you're not there, you'll be charged. He will win $2,000 or $2,500 something, because that's a maximum. Whatever
right,
the maximum
right.
was.
If you don't show up,
if you don't show up, they automatically get it. And I'm reading it, and I'm like, here's the complaint. Dr. Pinsky inserted a device into my tooth that makes me have erections at his will. I'm like, well, that's a psychotic symptom.
Yeah.
You took that as a fucking small claims complaint at the fucking courtroom, and if I don't show up for that, are you? I could, and it went on about how I was tormenting him and I was making him have erections.
Oh my God, it's a crazy
complete psychotic. But the name caught my attention. The guy's name was like Whitaker or something. What a weird name! But I think I've seen that name from her. And this was back in the days of MySpace.
Yeah.
And I remember I came across this weird MySpace thread, or it kept coming up on my thread, where this guy was making these weird, bizarre allegations against me. And I just, again, I just ignored it. And I thought, I think that's that same guy. I think it's wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah.
So I went into, and MySpace was sort of done by that point. This was like 4 or 5 years after MySpace had a peak. And I went into MySpace. And lo and behold, it was the same name. I don't know how I should have put it all together, but I was able to do it. And I went onto the guy's MySpace, and here was hundreds, maybe thousands of pages of diatribes about me and my family and what he's going to do to us. And I don't remember what I did next. I think I told somebody, and somebody said, no, this is – you got to take this seriously, because the guy was getting weirder. And I said, I think I called an attorney. I said, you know, what do I do? I've got a small claim. I said, well, you're going to have to show up. I'm like, I'm not going to show up? Because, you got to show up. I go, no, we're going after this guy. So I sort of started going down the I'm going to report it path, and passing the police got involved and my wife got involved. And then the stuff got really wild. He was describing he was going to eat my children in front of my wife and do these horrible things.
Oh, my God.
And dismemberments. And it was really explicit, bizarre, cannibal. I mean, really horrible stuff. And the guy turned up at K-Rock and jumped like in the middle of the night on somebody was driving away. He jumped up on their hood and started screaming about me. So we kind of knew that he was around closing in. And we were in Westwood One back then.
Right.
And so here's the comedy. And if you know my wife, this is awesome. So the police department gets involved. Now the FBI gets involved. They're trying to track this guy down because it's very serious when you make those kinds of allegations. And finally, when he started saying these horrible things about my kids, my wife was like, okay, that's it. I'm going to go get this guy. And she brought the detectives over and she goes, all right, read this. And it's all these horrible things. She goes, all right, you read that? She goes, okay, this guy wants my kids. I am not afraid to die. I'm not afraid to die. I'm going to go fucking kill that guy. So you got to get him, because if you don't, I have no fear. I have no fear of him killing me, because he's talking about killing my kids. I'll die first, but I'm going to kill him. Don't trust me. And the cops are like, honey, whoa, honey, Ms. Pinsky, relax, Ms. Pinsky. She's like, no, go now or I'm telling you what I'm going to do. And so they went and found that he was like a homeless meth guy who was using the Pierce College Library at the Valley
to email
live
it.
In and use the computers. And he would stay there overnight like on the benches or something, and then go in and use the computers during the day. And then try to track me down during the day.
Oh, my God.
And we got him. And there's a whole stalking department at the DA here.
So now where is he?
He went into treatment. I was actually – then I was like, okay. I felt bad for the guy. I mean, he went into treatment. Once they started treating him, lo and behold, a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing about mental health in this country.
Is the restraining order like
– everything's in place. Everything's all good.
Okay.
And the guy – you know, if he relapses or whatever, and who says he's going to have the same psychosis?
Right,
you know,
right.
it's probably not going to include me next time around.
Why somebody maybe younger? Go on. Just kidding.
That would be the women would not be interested in me. Guys still may freak out about me. So I was, and the DA liked the fact that I was a compassionate for the guy, because most people apparently just go, forget the guy, fry him.
No,
they can get better. They can get better. I feel bad for him. And he was like in long-term treatment again.
Yeah.
Long-term stuff. So,
but that is so scary. You know, it's like,
Does Chelsea have stuff like that she has to deal with?
No, there was something way in the beginning, and she had like a security, like a bodyguard come.
Really?
In the very beginning.
A bodyguard?
A bodyguard that like her boyfriend at the time, Ted, hired. And Ted's older, so he hired like this really older bodyguard. And she'd be like running down the hall, like in her heels, like before show. And then we'd just see like the old bodyguard running after. It was hilarious. And then finally she was like, I think I'm okay.
Chewy as a bodyguard.
Yeah, she's like, I think I'm okay. Like, she's like, I think this is all right now. But now we have really good
security
at Universal. And so, but you should never be, you know, with the Facebook and the Twitter, it's like you get, it's so easy for people to talk to you, you know? And
do you get horrible stuff your direction? I get, dear, I hate Twitter for the horrible stuff.
I'm pretty blessed that the people pretty much like me. Once in a while, they'll write something mean, and then I'll look on their page, and I'll see that they're writing mean stuff to other people, too.
Yes.
So I'm like, they're just trying to get someone to react. And so I now, like, for years, I didn't know how to block someone. That's how someone taught me. So if you write something mean, I block you. The other day, this guy used to write sweet things to me. He was like an older guy on his picture, and he would just, you know, and whatever. And so one day I saw that he wrote, "Hey, Heather, I'm almost there." With a pic. No, I immediately thought, it's the last page of my book. That's what I thought, because I'm conceited. And I thought, oh, he's almost there. He almost finished my book. I'm going to click on this picture. I'm going to see the last page of my book. That's what I thought, because I'm a positive person. Full erection, naked, picture. And I'm like, I hate that someone can trick you into seeing such an awful thing that now is embedded in my mind forever. So he immediately got blocked.
That's good.
But I was flattered.
You can report those guys,
I mean, how
too.
Do you not get flattered? A little bit.
So, Chris, if you've got any plans for Heather, now you know what to do. You get it? You get the move?
Got it.
Okay. All right, good.
Trick me into thinking that you're reading my book and
just
then just send a dirty picture.
Just show up naked with an erection. That's
all
you got.
This book is great.
Yeah. It's good. My huge penis. Kind of an old man. And he had like fat womanly thighs too. It was so gross.
That is gross. I'm still back at you showing up with a 3-day-old with an ice pack on your vagina. That's unbelievable. Oh, are you following the Jodi Arias case?
Of course.
Any questions about that?
Where are we now? Just update me.
We are.
I can't watch you 24 hours a day.
Tell me
where we are.
We have a domestic violence expert on the stand, and we're doing the juror questions.
Okay.
And we're going to have another defense witness, and then the prosecution has to present its case.
This is my thing. I think that some people are capable of murder.
Yes.
And that's it. They're not crazy, and they're not abused. They just can murder.
Right.
Is that so unheard of?
No, that's true.
That's what she did.
Yes.
She just was like, I feel like killing you, and I'm going to. And she did it.
Chris, we're learning something about
and
Heather
that's,
here. I'm just
that's
saying.
It.
She's tipping her, she's
I
tipping
just
her
hate
hat
that
a little bit
every
here.
Single
– tipping her cards.
Every single – what?
Nothing.
I'm just saying
nothing
that
at all.
I don't think that every single person is crazy that kills. I don't think every single person that that is crazy and evil had a horrible life that led them to that. I think some people are just evil and capable of being evil.
That's true. Except it's these days more common that they have horrible lives. Horrible. You create monsters for the most part. For the most part.
I believe for the most part,
and by
too.
The way,
but
and
it's
by the
like...
way, the ones you create still have to have some genetic predispositions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are plenty of people who go through horrible things and are fine. You know, they just – or they make it out, whatever. But I think the Travis had some stuff going on too. I mean, he had horrible abuse. And I think he was because that – became
he was abused?
Oh, way worse than she.
Well, what's all the stuff that they're trying to insinuate that he was a bit of a pedophile?
That's bullshit. Because
he's into like, oh, you sound like a 13-year-old girl. No,
he likes her in pigtails, and she maybe saw him drop a magazine when he was masturbating one day, and it fell open to a page of a boy in underwear. Oh, that's pedophile. That's their game.
I mean,
one time flipping by a magazine and deciding to jack off to it.
I mean,
that's pedophile.
I think he was. Yeah, he had. Oh, that's right. He did have the abuse. Now I remember. His parents
mom,
are drug addicts. He's raised by the grandma. Yeah,
no. Mom beat him, abandoned him, but horrible.
But
stuff.
I definitely think he was someone that was conflicted. He wanted to live this like good Mormon Christian life.
Yes.
But like any other guy, he had this little slut that would do whatever he wanted.
Well,
so he didn't want to give that up either.
Right. I think she brought that all out.
Yeah.
I think he probably was very not that way, or sort of really tried not to be that way, and really got into it with her. And then she just – and you. I think she used sex the way men use aggression and violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
See, as a man –
as a manipulator, yeah.
As a man, that's a very – it's a reach as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so motivated by sex. We just want sex. To use sex for power and control, like, doesn't make sense to us.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, what would you, if you were on the juror, what if your jury?
Guilty, guilty of premeditated murder, but I would not, I have trouble doing a death sentence. I wouldn't be able to do that.
I'm not for the death sentence.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's there. I hope it deters people, but I wouldn't be able to do it.
I don't know.
Like,
I think it's ridiculous because it costs so much to kill someone.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. And, and God forbid, you know, well, now they're discovering how many people have been in death row that where the DNA proves that they're innocent. So for that case, I know it's really hard when someone's like, this person killed everybody in your family and that awful thing, but I just think for the legal system, it just doesn't work, unfortunately.
Well, help me understand how women use sex as power and control. Because I see that's what she's doing, but I can't really get my head around it very well. Do women do a lot of that kind of thing?
I don't know. You know, when you – like, there was a story about some woman. It was in one of my favorite 48-hour mysteries in the OC. She had two kids. She got some old rich man to, like, pay for everything. She was sleeping with this football player at the time. He was killed. She got away with it for, like, 20 years.
She killed the football player?
No, the football player – well, now, who knows the truth, but he did get convicted in the end. And they both got convicted.
Killing the old man.
Yes, he killed. He actually did the killing, but she was behind it. But in the 15 years since the old man died, she got married two more times to very wealthy men, had a child with each of them. So she was like on her fourth marriage when she was arrested for murder.
Ugh.
And that's when I'm like, what is it about these women that can get married over and over again, make men fall in love with them? Yes, I think they're like obviously the bomb in the sack, you know, and they have some tricks that they're not sharing with the rest of us.
But what is?
I think that they're like sociopaths where they become whatever. They're smart enough to figure out what the guy wants, and they just become that.
But they stay with it. That's what they say.
Because I don't think they have a real. Maybe eventually they come out, and that's why she gets divorced and marries someone else. But I think she can trap them and fall in love. I mean, it's like a job. It's like the, you know, a Black Widow kind of a thing. I'm totally mesmerized by it because I couldn't even go on a second date with someone I didn't like.
Right.
Sometimes even a first. Sometimes halfway through planning the date, I was like, you know what? I'm starving, but it isn't worth it. It's not worth it. Like, I had a date with this guy, and he was like, God, you don't seem very funny. And he's like very challenging. He was like an attorney. But I always went for like professional, like a little bit older guys because I wanted a nice life. And I wasn't into like dating actors or bitter comics. And then I just was like, you know what? Let's just forget it. He goes, forget what? I'm like, let's forget the date. Like, I'm like, honestly, we're never going to get it. Like, it's not going to happen.
When was this?
Like, you don't even want, oh, this is like, you know, when I'm like 26.
You said forget the date or he did?
I said forget the date. So I used to go on lots of dates because A, I was hungry. B, I'd get material. And I like to go to nice places, and I loved going on dates. I loved guys picking me up and going on dates.
Dates are fun, right? I used to like to date.
Nobody dates anymore now. You just go in big groups and have sex. It's so sad.
I tell my sons, learn how to date, because you had women like dating.
Oh, my God, they love dating, and it's so – yeah, it's they don't know how to do it. And it's like that was so much fun getting cute and knowing that someone was planning a date and picking me up on a Saturday. Sometimes they weren't great dates, but it was like something to look forward to.
Social, fun.
Yeah, and so – but then after a while, I was like, okay, I'm only dating people I like now because I don't need to eat that. I mean, I can pay for a meal. I couldn't afford to ever go to someplace nice when in my 20s.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pay $100. I didn't want to spend $80 with my girlfriends. Like if we went to the nightclubs or a place that was happening that had food, I used to look at other people's plates. I was like, God, what I would do for that chicken skewer. I'm starving all the time. Starving.
Did you grow up in Los Angeles?
Yeah. But I wasn't going to go sit down and drop $30 on food.
Where'd you grow up?
Woodland Hills,
Valley. You're a guy to do that.
Yeah, and then we'd go out, whatever was hot, Beverly Hills, Hollywood, whatever the hot thing
was. The guy has to.
Yeah, and I would buy like my first drink, but then hopefully I would get drinks for free, you know, because it's like, who had money for that, you know?
And now
that I can afford to go to a nightclub and eat, I'm fucking old. I don't want to go. Once in a while, like when I remember when Chelsea first started doing Chelsea, and like she and Ted, we go to like nightclubs, and I hadn't been to a nightclub that ever bottle service did not exist in 1999.
Right. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
And now I'm with rich people, and we're in a booth, and there's this huge bottles of vodka, and it's like between cheapness and gluttony, it was like I just freaking got so dry, and I like hadn't partied like that in like 8 years, so. The first year of Chelsea lately, I drank too much and got myself in some trouble.
What do you mean trouble? What happened?
Trouble like, oh, well, we were always into taking – there was always some asshole person that was taking a picture of me being drunk, and then it would become a cold open and be on the show. And the main thing was she took everybody to Cabo, and she had an open bar, and everything was free. We went to Me by Malia, which is like hot music the whole time. Like, I mean, horrible. Like, I'd never go there now, but we were like, this is fabulous. So I'm drinking in the day, and we're all in the pool, and there's pictures of me, like, kind of making out with Peter, and, like, you know, but it was
– Well, as long as Peter.
Right. But they made such a big deal out of it. Like, I'm such a mess. I'm like, I'm making out with my husband of 10 years and I'm like the horrible slut. Meanwhile, like, people that are getting like blowjobs from cougars that they just met.
Who's
and
that?
Like, Chris Rangiola. Okay. And so I'm like, okay, so it was ridiculous. I mean,
Chris,
it got used
Chris
so many
Lexa,
times.
Schedule Chris Rangiola. I need to talk to him.
He'll come. He's hilarious. So, yeah. So now that, but like when I do Vegas and stuff, we'll go to like a nightclub one night.
Do you guys go to Vegas frequently?
Yeah.
Where do you stay when you go there?
South Point. Well, I'll be performing June 7th through the 9th.
South Point's a hotel?
Yes, a hotel and casino. It's like right off of the strip.
Ah.
And, but then we'll go to like Marquee or something in Cosmo.
That Marquee is huge.
We'll go to like the fancy
place. Somebody just walked me through it. I was like, oh my God.
Last time we were there, it was.
That's the Cosmopolitan
place, over
Christmas. Right?
It was over like New Year's Eve and all that. So it was. So we got in comped and we got some tickets, but we didn't have like the table or anything. I go, that's fine. It's just my sister and her husband, and we're old people to be at this nightclub.
Yeah.
We're having fun. We're just about to leave. I've had three drinks. Perfect buzz. Then they go, oh, Heather, we'd like to comp you some bottle service. Would you like to sit down?
Uh-oh. Yeah, you can't say that.
Now
Heather
I have this big bottle.
Yeah, now you got to drink it.
I see it cost $500 and we're not paying for it. We're just tipping.
You don't want to be rude.
Then I had a few. So then we have a few drinks.
She's got it. She can't waste the $500. She got to drink the bottle.
So then my sister said, we get back to the South Point. The South Point limo takes us home. And my name is on the marquee. I'm performing there. I had to have both the husband and the brother-in-law hold my arms on either side. Shannon, my sister, said that when we got out there, so the valet came up to her and said, ma'am, could your sister use a wheelchair?
Well, it's a
when
good
you,
thing.
When you are asked if you need a wheelchair in Vegas, that's pretty bad.
It's a good thing that they overstated on Chelsea what a mess you would become. They clearly overstated it.
I've gotten much better, though, besides that last gig. That was probably the last time I got drunk. That time.
6 weeks ago?
No, that was like December 28th. We're okay. I really try to drink a lot of water before I go to bed. Can we answer questions?
Let's take some calls.
Okay.
Right, you want to pick one you like? Do I need to take a break, Chris? Am I good?
You're good.
I want to hear about, let's see, want something she can take? No, I don't care about the drug stuff. Hold on. I like the wants to get back together with her bipolar ex.
Let's do that. That is Anne. Go ahead there, Anne. What's up?
Hi.
Hey, you're on with Heather.
Hi.
Heather
McDonald.
Here she is.
You're funny. I like that story.
Which one? She told a lot of good ones. Oh, her needing a wheelchair in Las Vegas?
Yes, that's
a good one.
I've never seen anyone needing a wheelchair in Las Vegas.
No,
either.
You probably never will.
my question is... regarding my ex that I broke up with and left, and I didn't realize that he was bipolar until after I broke up, after going to therapy, because what was happening was that now, come to find out, he was self-medicating with alcohol.
Yeah, but now listen, maybe he's just an alcoholic. That can look like bipolar, too.
Well, I think it's bipolar, because the alcohol abuse didn't start until he started taking Lexapro. Which is not the right thing, from what I hear, for someone who might be
right.
That,
it can make a bipolar manic, make them manic.
It made him way off the charts, and I thought it was just, oh, he's on the wrong dosage, or maybe he needs a different antidepressant or something. It's got to be the wrong pill. He needs a different antidepressant because then.
How old are you?
36.
And how long were you dating him for?
6 years.
Ooh.
Well, that's a lot vested.
Do you have kids?
No. No.
And he was normal up until the point he got on the Lexapro?
Yes, besides having a bout of what he thought was depression. And then I was encouraging him to go to therapy, counseling, or something to help him get through it. Yeah. But instead he went to his doctor, and just the normal doctor, and said, hey,
Anne, I'm sorry, but that is such a classic story. I just did an episode of Dr. Oz where we talked about this very issue. Something like 80% of the antidepressants or 90% of antidepressants prescribing in this country is done by primary care people and gynecologists. They have almost zero training in this, and they never assess for bipolar, ever. And so this kind of story I would hear all the time. So and I just want to be sure, though, there's never been a substance history because I smell substance here.
Not that I can tell.
Never been one?
No. From him? No, and neither me.
Him.
But that's
him.
Why I was so confused. I was like, what is going on? And the verbal attacks and the outbursts. And then I started feeling affected because then I was on pins and needles all the time. And
right.
Did you guys live together too?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's like moved out, but now he wants to get back together?
No, I moved out. I listened to the podcast that you had for Andy Berman, I think.
Uh-huh.
And the other gal, Julianne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I related a lot to what they were talking about.
But remember, Andy was, am I getting Andy's name right? Andy was a drug addict and a bipolar. He had both things going on.
Yeah. Well, I've gone to Al-Anon since then.
So why did you go to Al-Anon if he's not an alcoholic?
Because I thought he was an alcoholic. I didn't know.
I know. Why do I keep pushing on the drug thing or the alcohol thing? Because I feel like it's
but
here.
He was. He was drinking and drinking.
Every day and passing out on the floor.
Okay, so that's alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't care what else you are, you're alcoholic. All right, yeah. So I'm suspicious he may have been doing some meth or something too. I mean, Lexapro, it's a very mild medicine. Usually does not trigger a bipolar episode. So anyway, what do you want to do now? We don't know what's up with him. He could be substance, could be bipolar, could be both. What do you want to do?
I don't know. So I set some boundaries and said I'm not going to talk to you until, and maybe someday I can talk to you if you, because I've been affected. Like,
okay.
It made me have anxiety and all that. And
okay.
So I said, you know, if you get therapy and change your medication and go get recovery, maybe someday we can talk
okay.
again.
Has he done all that?
He's done two of the three things, and
no,
that's what
no recovery.
I'm like, not recovery.
Yeah, of course
and
not.
I really believe in the 12-step.
Oh,
now
yes.
That
and it's essential. Listen, if you're going to go right back into the mess without the treatment, without recovery. And by the way, if he were in 12-step, one of his rules of thumb is no changes in your relationship
I don't
for the first
know.
12
I mean,
months.
I don't know. I don't mean to sound harsh, but like you're 36, and I just don't think – what are you hoping to get married and have kids with this person? I mean, I would kind of, how about cutting your losses or at least trying to date someone else? And maybe the more time away will make you realize that he isn't the person to spend the rest of your life with.
Yeah, I've given that a lot of thought too. It's been months, which was, you know, I just was already going to move on completely. But to have all this come up, I just don't know from you guys' experience if someone is really committed to managing their bipolar, their alcoholism, whatever it might be, is that
here's what I listen, I'm as you know, a lot of faith in recovery and treatment works, but here's how I approach this, and not necessarily, you know, you do what you want to do, but if somebody were to come to me and say, what do you think I should do? I'd say, listen, give this guy a chance. You want to give him a chance? It means a lot to you? Fantastic. 12 months sober in the program, active engagement with his sponsor. At the end of that 12 months, if he's doing well, okay. And you're in Al-Anon, you want to tiptoe back in? Okay.
Yeah, but you got to let more time go.
A lot more time. And she said no recovery. That's the one thing I
yeah.
would require. Okay, and thank you. Jennifer, what's up there?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan.
Thanks. What's up?
I have been in a relationship with a guy for 5 years. I'm totally in love with him. He's fantastic. We have no issues. My issue, though, is that I, a couple years ago, just lost interest in having sex. I have pretty much no libido. I continue to have sex with him regularly because I know it's important to him, and so I do it. I never look forward to it. It's not something that it's not unpleasant. Once we start, it's fine, but I just don't look forward to it. So that's where I'm at, and I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to create that spark again.
Well, hold on. Did you start any medication 2 years ago?
Nope. No, I've been on the NuvaRing because I know I've been listening to all your other podcasts about the pill and all that. I'm using the NuvaRing. I never heard you talk about that, so I don't know if that might have something to do with it.
I think the Andrew Goldstein podcast, which is up right now, right? It's up right this minute. I think we do talk about the NuvaRing. And he was saying some women do have a problem with that. But yeah, usually it's hard.
But I've been using the maneuver ring since before I met him.
All right, so probably not that likely. How's the relationship going?
Very good. Really solid. Madly in love. There's no problems there. I feel really
Well, you're not madly in love. Because you're not passionate to, like, jump his bones ever. Even after, like a romantic drinking night, even it's you never want it. Not even, like, if you went away. Nothing. Every time you're like, oh, okay.
If there are sisters, if we go on vacation and we go drinking and, you know, we've been talking about it, then okay, I'll be in the mood. But it's rare. Yeah, it's rare that I want to. Once we start, then I am in the mood for the act. But the starting part is what I'm never interested in.
I get it.
Because I get it, too. I think sometimes when you're just in a relationship, it's like, especially being, I've been married a long time, but it's like if you live together, it's like there's always tomorrow. It's like when you're dating, you want to get with that person because they're going to leave your house.
But it's a change. It's a change for Jennifer that she seems like she had that for 3 years and she lost it.
She had it for 2 years. No, she had it. Oh, you're right. Three. Sorry.
Let me ask this. Is there anything in your past that would make it more difficult for you to be sexual with somebody that you are increasingly intimate and connected to, like a sexual abuse or anything like that?
Definitely not. No trauma or anything.
All right. So good.
Yeah, I'm just like lazy. You know, I just feel like I might be just lazy. It's because exactly what Heather was saying.
I think you can be lazy. Like you're just
TV.
Tired just and you're tomorrow. Watching TV and you're like, we can do it tomorrow. We can do it tomorrow. We can do it tomorrow. And it's good that you don't let so much time go.
How often are you actually having sex?
3 times a week.
That's pretty good.
That's doing fine.
But yeah, but she never wants to do it. But
maybe it's too much. Maybe maybe twice a week she would want to do it. Maybe there's not enough time to build up a little steam in the engine. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe. Yeah, but it's important to him, and I know.
No, I understand that. Listen, but you got to compromise these things. It's got to work right for both people. 3 times a week is above average and doing pretty good. But if it's sort of sometimes people can get, you know, they sort of feel like it's a chore because they have to keep up with the other person.
Yeah.
And they don't have ever chance for their own libido to sort of kick back up to full steam. I would.
Do you guys ever watch Spartacus? It's pretty sexy.
No.
Game of Thrones.
I haven't seen it.
Game of Thrones.
All right. Yeah.
It's like porn with a history lesson. It's pretty good. I'm just saying.
How about just porn?
Well, I'm just saying if you don't want.
What's the history lesson in Game of Thrones? It's some weird fantasy.
Oh, really? Oh. Well, whatever.
We do watch porn.
I only watch the sexy parts.
All right.
Yeah, so you do watch porn. Does that get you in the mood?
Totally. Yeah. So but I don't even want to start watching the porn. You know, it's like, all right, well, maybe this will help me get more in the mood. Let's do that. And then it works.
For a little while, back it off a little bit. Just a little less frequently and see what happens. Stephanie, what's going on?
Hey,
Stephanie.
So my psychiatrist told me I couldn't take any ibuprofen or anything for my cramp because it makes my lithium levels go up.
Oh, boy.
I have a copper IUD, and I kind of want to keep it. So I was wondering if there was anything else I could take.
Would they let you maybe put in like a Mirena IUD, like something with progesterone in it?
Oh, I don't want that.
Why?
Hormones. I have enough problems.
Okay.
That
all right. Fair
hormones.
Enough. Listen, that's probably smart. I'm just thinking of things that have local effects, but yeah, even the local stuff can get you. Tylenol doesn't do it.
Well, she said I can't take anything like that because it makes the lithium levels go up.
I don't think Tylenol will. The ibuprofens and things will, the anti-inflammatories, but I don't think Tylenol will.
Really?
Yeah. Why don't you ask about that? I don't believe so. And even then, what I might do is I would talk to the gynecologist about the psychiatrist about really systematically using an anti-inflammatory, and then maybe measuring your lithium levels to see what happens and really kind of walk through it. Because if it's really that uncomfortable, you have to do something. Maybe you can do it, but just do it in a very controlled, observed way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but in the meantime, I don't think Tylenol affects lithium. I'd be surprised if it does. I'm not an expert on that, and I understand the ibuprofens and things can because it affects the kidney clearance. But I don't think Tylenol. All right?
Okay, great.
All right, good luck.
All right, bye. Thank you.
Are we going to Casey? I'm excited to hear about Casey.
All right, we'll go to Casey. Heather's excited to hear about you, so go ahead.
Oh, okay, well, it's not that exciting. Hey, so I got married a year ago. And we both came from long-term marriages and mixed, we blended kids. And
how many kids?
4. I had 1. She had 3. And I started losing my temper, you know, just of all the they moved to my house. I just started losing my temper about things. Well, she didn't like that, and she moved out, moved back to her parents' house with her kids. Well, it turns out she was, in her marriage, it was very emotionally abusive, and she got immediately diagnosed with PTSD.
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't realize that. I knew it was a bad marriage, but I didn't realize that. And we're still very much in love, but we were separated for 8 months, and a month ago she ended the marriage.
Oh, my
God. She had it annulled.
Oh, my God.
She can't. She looks at me like she barely remembers me.
Oh, wow. And oh, she has real serious trauma stuff. How long did you know her before you got engaged?
Yeah, well, we had known each other when we were younger, and we were both married. We weren't really a part of each other's lives. We went to school together. And so we dated for a couple of years. We only lived together for 6 months.
I think if she had a husband that screamed at her all the time and then you started, she was just like, screw this.
He was passive aggressive. He was very passive aggressive and manipulative, controlling. And, you know, I'm a passionate guy. So she wasn't used to somebody being really expressive. So Dr. Drew, you know, she's been to multiple therapists who all tell her she needs EMDR. But she's very resistant to it.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, it's not the husband that was yelling at her. She had some horrible abuse before that in childhood, for sure, for sure.
And so it's before the emotional abuse?
Something bad happened in childhood that she doesn't want to get into. That trauma survivors always have the sense that, you know, I dealt with that. I don't want to think about it anymore. It's fine. I'm fine. I don't even think about it anymore. It doesn't bother me at all. When in fact these traumas are like walled off, you know, behind a brick wall, and they're there always generating these sources of all kinds of chaos and character problems and interpersonal dysfunction and dissociation. And until they get back into it and rewire that part to sort of reconnect with those feelings and then regulate those feelings from the rest of their present self, you know, their body actually regulates with that, it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing, because when she sees me, she'll be like, oh, I remember you, and she'll be real loving. But the minute she goes away, it's like she has closed off a wall, and she, the way she deals with me is it's out of sight, out of mind.
Well, it's called object constancy. It's literally that things and people cease to exist when they're outside of your field of vision. And that's, again, real primitive stuff. Real primitive stuff. And needs treatment. Needs a lot of treatment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of peculiar that you didn't pick up on some of this stuff for the 2 years you were dating. Were you dating regularly?
No. I mean, it was great. And I think that... I guess it was because it was so, he was so passive aggressive, and he's not a loud guy. He doesn't yell at all. But she was so unhappy for all those years they were married that she had to shut down.
Yeah.
What's it like when you guys were together and the ex-husband would come to like pick up the kids and stuff? Was he pleasant or?
I never dealt with him at all. He's a clean cut. Sort of professional.
Casey, I would say forget about that ex-husband. That is not the problem. I'm telling you, that is not what
you're
describing.
I was just curious.
That is
she
not.
She would start weeping when she talks about him.
Well, I don't care. That's not what the issue is. Unless he beat the shit out of her and did some other stuff that was really over the top. But doesn't fit. Something's missing. And you're describing stuff of someone who's had early bad trauma. And, of course, people that trauma will recreate that by getting involved with traumatic people. And maybe he did something to her to re-traumatize her. I don't know. But
maybe she's just not meant to be married. Could that ever
That's
be
sad.
It?
I don't want that.
I like the way Heather,
I don't know. I mean, maybe...
Heather likes to sort of trowel over things with a nice big...
Well, I'm not a therapist. Like, I mean, I'm just saying...
She's just a murderer. She's Jody that murders. That's all. Nothing wrong with her. She's just the Jody that murders.
Maybe she
and
just doesn't
Casey's
want...
wife is just the case, just a person that doesn't need to
don't
be
you
married.
Think though, but don't you think some people just really don't want that? They can't handle it. They're just not good with sharing their complete life with someone.
People
and they
need
don't
work,
want it.
Love, and play. Period. And if they're having problems in one of those areas, there's a problem and it's big. They need it. People need it. Now, do they have to be monogamously? You know, no, they don't.
Right.
But there's real dysfunction relating. There's something going on. And it's not just, marriage doesn't fit for me. Sorry, Heather. Let's go back to Jody Arias. What else do you want to know about Jody before we wrap up?
Oh, God. Is there any new murderesses coming on the horizon?
We're looking.
I mean, I'm sure you
HLN
are.
HLN needs one.
You know what? I get kind of upset when I watch like a 48-hour mystery and it's the same thing, but they just have a new ending. Don't trick me. I saw the story 2 years ago. We have to find more people that are murdering their spouse to feature on TV.
We need something else
there are so many shows right now.
I know. You need something else. What else? And it's all women that get attracted to this stuff. Women love to hate other women. They love it.
No, I love any story about, you know, infidelity and killing your spouse, insurance money, trying to get away with it. I don't know why. I've liked it for almost 10 years.
Do you watch those American Greed stories on CNBC?
I love those.
Those are good, yeah.
I like...
But even those are running out of those.
They're running out. There's only so many.
Yeah.
I'm only attracted to it if the people are somewhat... some money and are attractive.
Attractive people, of course.
Not the poor people.
Yeah, you're not
care.
Shallow. No.
And I know. I mean, even my kids are like, God, why do you like what these shows about murderers so much? I'm like, I don't know.
Did you read The Devil in the White City?
No, should I get it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, are you kidding?
Well, did you read Gone Girl?
No, what's that?
Gone Girl is the best. It was someone like me who was obsessed with these stories, wrote a fictional story about a wife who goes missing. And every other chapter is her point of view, his point of view. And then it's so good. I think it's going to become a movie too.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
And but yeah, I don't know. I like I also like stories about women who marry convicted criminals too.
If you weren't married to Peter, would you hang out, like, you know, get attached to
the
Hillside Strangler?
No, but I understand why women do. Because
why?
I totally understand
why.
Because maybe not a murder, but someone in jail.
Why?
Convicted. Because the guy has all the time in the world to give them attention. They live for that 20 minutes to talk to them. They're not distracted by other women. They're not distracted by a job. They're not distracted by sports. It's a woman that just requires so much attention. She has full control of the relationship. She has her weekends free, except when she has to get on that bus to go visit him on Sundays. And she can say she's married. And she can just read the letters all night long about how much he loves her because he has all day to write them.
And what does that do for her? As a man, you're like, what the hell are you talking
about? She's
like,
any man is better than no man philosophy, which is the worst. And then she's fulfilled by it. Do you know, the Menendez brother, one of them, I can't remember which, married this girl, and I went out with the girl's ex-boyfriend, and he brought her out here. He was an actor. He brought, her name was Anna Menendez, okay, before she married him. Her name was Anna. He brought her out here. He was trying to become an actor. She was like a secretary or something. Every day he used to come home and she was watching court TV. He didn't think anything of it, watching the whole Menendez trial.
No.
And then one day the phone rings and it was Eric or Lyle. I don't know which one. Look it up. And it was, and he's like, what are you doing there? Give me the phone. Pass the phone to my girlfriend. That's what the criminal says. And so the Menendez brother, she ends up breaking up with the actor.
She was already seeing the Menendez at that point?
I don't know if she'd visited him. She'd started writing him. They were on the phone.
Oh, my God.
And in California, you know, you can't have conjugal visits. So they get married, but they never sleep together. And for years they're together. And then I saw a special on her, Women Who Marry Prisoners. And she went to go visit him one day and there was another woman sitting there. He absolutely started cheating on her emotionally with writing to other women. And then she goes, you know, our friends were devastated. What friends? What, on Saturday night, did you have a dinner party and just put the phone in the middle and be like, I made a fabulous roast beef. I wish you could enjoy it.
Or did he go to the movies with people? What the hell?
I don't know who their friends were that supported the relationship. What friends?
That's
so
weird.
Anyway, yeah, then he eventually married someone else. Do you imagine you can get women like that and you're just a murderer? You murdered your parents? I always think it's so sad that they split the boys up. As even though they were murderers, they should have put them in the same prison.
Why?
Because at least they could see each other.
Oh, please.
But see, that would be too nice. We have to split them up. I think the ultimate punishment was that they broke the brothers up.
How about that we don't let him have wives?
Well, I agree with that too, but I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with women? Come on.
I don't know. That's why everybody has a pet. dogs, and you can just have a dog or a cat.
As opposed to a woman?
Anybody. You know, like, so many people are like, it's like half the people now are living their life single. Not even living with, it's not about getting married. People don't even want to live with anybody anymore. They would just rather have a pet.
That's sad.
Because it's like a pet, a dog, you can, you know, is always happy to see you. It's not going to cheat on you. It's not going to talk back. If it dies, you don't have to wait a year before you bring a newer one home. No one's going to judge you. That's all you need.
And with that, the great Heather McDonald, let me put up this place where you can find Heather. Zany's Comedy Club, Nashville, May 2nd through 4th. Phoenix, May 10th through 12th at the Stand Up Live. And South Point Hotel, Las Vegas, June 7th through 9th. Irvine Improv, June 27th. Heather McDonald at HeatherMcDonald.net is the website. My Inappropriate Life, if you've ever had any doubt about whether...
Oh, and I have audio versions, too, if you're into hearing things, because obviously you are if you're listening to this.
We will have click-throughs at DrDrew.com. And again, be sure to click through to make sure the Corolla pirate ship stays afloat. Until next time, thank you very much.
Thank you.